Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It's June 16th, 2019. This is Tom in the Washington, D.C. Outpost. Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Happy Father's Day to you. I should have done the intro today. You can say happy Father's Day to yourself as well. I don't know if anybody's going to construe that as narcissistic, but from the outside looking in as I don't know if you can call me the fatheree, being the son in this situation, I can give 25,000 thumbs up in the air. And thank you for being such an amazing father to me, to my sister, and most importantly, to Steelers Nation, baby.
Well, I'm humbled by that. I appreciate that.
And yeah, you deserve it.
Try to live up to it. Hey, I know we want to talk about football, but I just had a recent experience. I just went out to get a sandwich prior to us launching the podcast. And this is a little, these shops are on a street. So you pull, they actually have a straight in parking spot, but there is virtually no room. You have to pull out right into the street. And if you pull straight in, you've got to back into the street. And I know all of you have experienced this in life. It's when you try to get onto a highway from an on ramp and people feel it's their job to make sure you don't get on. It's sort of like blocking out in basketball.
Yeah, box them out.
This is just a cooperative situation. Everybody knows this is a horrible street to drive down. You need to go at 5 miles an hour. People are pulling in and out. And I'm watching this guy try to back out slowly, looking both ways. And I watch this Acura speed up, and then he lays on his horn on this guy. You know, clearly, and this the car that was coming up the street was 50 yards away, had plenty of time to slow down and give this guy a little chance. But hey, let's be kind to each other out there, especially on Father's Day.
Yeah. What's with the aggression, guys? I mean, training camp doesn't even start till August. If we're in August, if we're in September, if there's teams making a playoff run here. Now, you're in D.C., so I don't really think that they have to worry about that. But maybe they're Steelers fans in D.C. And you're in the zone? Sure. Maybe hit him with the little Joey Porter. Hit him with the intimidation. But it is June. Right now, it is Father's Day. You should be thinking about the dads of the world, not laying on the Acura horn, which I can only imagine must be, it's got to be a puny horn. It's got to be a B flat or something. You want a nice robust horn if you're going to lay on it that says like, hey, you know, I mean business, but also, you know, I got some restraint as well.
Yeah, something like an F-150. But speaking of preserving yourself, this actually is a good segue. We're talking about preserving yourself. Don't go too hard early in the season. But there's a lot of chatter about how much they're going to rely on James Conner. Are they going to burn him out like it presumably Le'Veon was approaching? And are they going to do a running back by committee this year?
Right. So the Steelers just got out of the required mini camp a couple of days there. And one of the big quotes that came out of the mini camp was the fact that Tomlin said that he is open basically to reducing James Conner's carries or running back one's carries. They've kind of doubled down and talking about how, you know, James Conner is the guy, but they really want to see what Benny Snell and Jalen Samuels have to offer. And I was thanking the gods, the football gods, when that quote came out, because we've been railing against this for years, man. And I know that it's easier said than done. It's June right now. Tomlin says, oh, we're going to reduce some of the running back one's carries. But but I could, of course, see us getting into the situation in October when the Steelers are up by 10 with 5 minutes left, you know, like up by two scores, and he's still running Le'Veon Bell back in the day, still running James Conner in this hypothetical futuristic situation, still running him, you know, 10 more times to ice the game. Like, how many times did you see that with Bell, especially, who, you know, got a pretty famously gigantic workload, where he would have one of those games where it's like 24 carries for 150 yards, one of his big games, and they would add another 10 carries on at the end of the game. And in one sense, if it's a one score game and it's in the fourth quarter, you do need to keep the beast man in there. And the beast man for us these days is James Conner. You need to keep him in there. You need to ice the game. But if you're up by two scores and it's very the likelihood is very low that the other team's going to be able to catch up, and you have somebody who you trust as the backup, like the Steelers always had. They had D'Angelo Williams. They had young James Conner, and we'll see what's up with Benny Snell. That, to me, is the time when you could take some of the wear and tear off of the Steelers running back, because, you know, Bell had the 1 year when they played the Jaguars in the playoffs where he actually made it through the entire year. But other than that, Bell and Conner are hurt every year.
Well, I went back to see what kind of load there's actually being levied, no pun intended, on the running backs. Last year, as you know, James Conner ranked 11th in terms of number of carries and number of yards in the NFL, but the Steelers were ranked 31st in the NFL in terms of number of carries and number of yards rushing. So I'm not sure, you know, that they exactly loaded up on him last year. But if you look at Le'Veon Bell's three seasons that he had, you know, more than a passing number of games, 2014, 16, and 17, he was the third leading carrier in 14, the eighth leading carrier in 16, the first leading carrier in 17. I think the difference is they just rode him. I mean, he averaged 70% of the carries when we had James Conner. He was about 67% of the carries. And in 2015, if you recall, D'Angelo Williams was carrying, and he only carried half the rushes that season. So it just seems like a special situation with Le'Veon that they loaded him up. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen this year, but we feel that they have a solid running back core. And I just imagine that they will follow through on what Tomlin said, and maybe not running back by committee connotes something that I don't think is going to happen, but I think that they'll be giving James Conner more spells this year.
I agree. I think that some people are skeptical about this because, you know, we've sort of heard him say this before and they haven't reduced the carries. I would argue, no, we really haven't heard him say this before or make a point to come out and take a stance on lowering the carries for the running backs. And I think that they have the sample size from years past, and they've seen how, you know, other teams can be effective when you bring a guy in to spell somebody for a minute. The best example I remember of how to take some wear and tear off your running back was Ezekiel Elliott's rookie year, when he was basically an NFL MVP candidate. Obviously, he tore us apart that year. And when the Steelers were playing the Cowboys, and I noticed this in a couple other Cowboys games I had seen earlier that year, but especially when the Steelers played them, Ezekiel Elliott was running rampant all over them. But in, I think, the end of the third quarter, they put in their backup running back. Alfred Morris was the backup at the time, and they gave him about five carries and sat Ezekiel Elliott, which reminds me sort of how, you know, whatever team LeBron James is playing for in the NBA, they sit him for like the first couple minutes of the fourth quarter so he can play the whole end there. And the third quarter, it's like, hey, you know, there's still plenty of time to handle your business after this, but this is a good point in the game to get the guy to take some carries off of him, especially when you have someone capable at the backup, which honestly, a lot of people do, and hopefully the Steelers have that. So I also agree with what you're saying about Le'Veon being sort of a special case, because you're also forgetting, I mean, the guy had a million catches, so he's getting way more touches than even the rushing carries show. Mm-hmm. And I got that to a certain point because Le'Veon Bell was such a force of nature that it really was – he was kind of an unstoppable force if you just fed him the ball in that way. So I do agree that he was more of a special case. You know, D'Angelo Williams getting half the carries that year, well, that's because I think he only started – you know, half the year because Bell had played the other ones. And then Conner last year, that's a really interesting stat you showed. Steelers have 31st or 32nd And that's what they placed in rushing attempts overall last year. But Connor, right, who missed four games or something like that, right? He's 11th in carries. That's crazy. That discrepancy tells you, oh yeah, it was James Connor who was getting a crazy amount of work. And I think that they've recognized that, and it'll help somebody like James Connor, who's a very physical runner, to take some pounding off his body.
Well, I don't know if I can extrapolate this one bit of data, but Le'Veon had averaged about almost 1,300 yards over those three seasons I quoted. But his more carries, I mean, it seems like the more carries, his yards per carry went down. And I don't know if that indicates just the exhaustion factor.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot in the last year when he actually played for the Steelers. And I know people might get annoyed about us talking about Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown so much on these podcasts, but that's the structure of the Steelers offense for the past 4 or 5 years. And now they're moving into a new structure. So that's where all of our data points come from. Le'Veon Bell was the Steelers running game. So that's how we talk about where they were and what they're transitioning to now. But that last year, we talked about that a lot, how his average was down. Some people wanted to make it a big deal because he missed training camp and it took him a little while to get going. I do think there's something to that, but I don't think that was all of it. You and I also said in a lot of those game breakdowns, the offensive line was not run blocking particularly well in those games. And a lot of that was Bell making something from nothing. So I don't know if we'll ever realize why his rushing average was down, particularly in that final year, but it was, and maybe exhaustion was part of that. My thing is more, injuries are a part of football. Football is, this is why, one of the big reasons why there's so much parity, besides the fact that the rules are set up to give teams with less good players a more of an opportunity to acquire good players via the salary cap, via draft position. But so much luck goes into football in terms of if you get the wrong injury at the right time. Maybe if you play a great team who, like I always use the example last time or two times the Steelers have played the Packers, Aaron Rodgers has been hurt. So you sort of luck out in that sense. And, you know, the ball bounces weird. You get a weird call against the Chargers. You get another weird call against the Saints. Xavier Grimble fumbles at the 0-yard line. Weird freak things happen. And, you know, it changes the direction of an entire game. It can be the difference between winning and losing. So if you can exert some sort of control over one of the biggest luck factors, which is the injuries, then you should try and do it, as long as you're not being stupid and just resting Connor for the sake of resting Connor.
Speaking of exhausting, I think we exhausted that. We are on Father's Day, and I was – think it made me think about both your kids and how early on I tried to get you interested in the Steelers. So, you know, clearly I was interested in the Steelers in the late 70s. There was a lot going on. It was a great time to be in Pittsburgh, especially it was in high school. And then I went to college and moved to Washington, got a job. It was hard to see a game down here. It was rare that it was on television. So and we also didn't have a lot of success, so I lost interest. And somewhere in the early 90s, I became aware of DirecTV. And at that time, I guess I started making enough money to afford the ridiculous cost of the NFL package. But I had a dish installed. I think actually it was 1996 I had the dish installed, so I was able to watch games. I renewed my interest. And I would sit you down next to me, and we'd have all the black and gold out, and all you wanted to do was play Batman. So it wasn't any of my impetus that ever caused your interest. And I don't recall when and why you got interested, because you certainly were not living in Steelers territory and you weren't interested in watching the games on Sunday.
And now I have a full-blown illness, right? And it's been that way for probably almost 20 years now.
The hole in the wall in your bedroom would attest to that.
Yeah, from Jerome Bettis fumbling on the 1-yard line against the Colts in the divisional. That's when I actually never saw the Ben Roethlisberger famous tackle. I did not see that in real time, because at that time in my life, I had little to no control over my emotions whatsoever. What was I, 15 at that time, I think? And once he fumbled, I believe I just screamed and sprinted into the room and chucked the football at the closet door, which still has a hole in it. You could tell the kid had a cannon. I already been playing QB for a couple of years, so I was prepared. But yeah, we were talking about this earlier this week. I was thinking it's funny too. Like, how did it get like this? And I actually, you know, grew up a pretty serious athlete, but I didn't become that way until around like fourth or fifth grade. Before that, you're right, it was all Batman. It was just Batman and Super Mario. Those were my interests. And nothing else, really. But a couple things clicked, and I was thinking back to it. You know, what's funny is Super Mario sort of led to my Steelers love. Obviously, the door was through you. I was by default a Steelers fan, brainwashed into believing I grew up in Pittsburgh, which used to piss mom off incessantly when I used to tell people that I'm from Pittsburgh. And she'd say, you were born in Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. I said, nope, I was born in Pittsburgh Hospital, Pittsburgh. But Super Mario indirectly sort of led to me becoming a serious Steelers fan. You guys got me N64, Nintendo 64 for my birthday or Christmas or something one year. And one of the games that came with it was Brett Favre's NFL Quarterback Club. A horrific football game, a stain on the underpants of football society in terms of video games. Madden would just spit upon this game. The gameplay was so bad. But nonetheless, I used to play with the Steelers and I started to get to know the actual players. That's when I fell in love with my first true love, Cordell Stewart, number 10, running quarterback, athlete of the Steelers. So I learned who Cordell was. I learned who Jerome Bettis was. I learned who Hines Ward was. I learned who Lee Flowers was, LaVon Kirkland. These are my guys on defense. And I think that just sort of gave me the in. So then we would watch on TV and you see Cordell. And now I start recognize like, hey, I know those players. And that's what really opened the door. And then there's kind of a thousand more hilarious steps that go from there. But that was the first thing. So I got to thank you again on Father's Day for that N64.
And then followed a series of very overpriced jerseys. And here we are today. As you pointed out, the emotion is unbridled. Well, it's a little better, but it adds to the podcast, I think.
It is a little bit better. Yeah, I actually work on that. I am serious where I do struggle sometimes. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, especially when the AB trade went down. I struggle sometimes with realizing how inconsequential it is to get sincerely worked up about football, you know, NFL football. Like, come on, man, you're not on the team. This is, you know, just for fun. This is whatever. I don't get super upset in real life. The only thing that can get me very angry is related to the Steelers, is Chris Boswell slipping on a game-winning field goal attempt against the Raiders. So I have to reconcile that a lot, and I work every year on not letting it have so much of a hold over me. It's kind of embarrassing almost. But I have also reconciled the fact that, like, hey, man, this is what it's all about, and the passion is real. And I live and die with the Steelers just like a lot of the people who listen to this podcast do, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And that's what makes it fun. It's an expression. There's other elements of your life that are getting sort of wrapped up into it. My life has been improved because of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know that sounds crazy, but one of the reasons why I love Antonio Brown so much was actually when I started following him on social media. And everybody makes the joke, it's just so ridiculous how tied in that guy is. But I would watch his Instagram live videos, and that's when I really started to get a sense of how hard this guy works. And you know, people, you just hear about players working hard and this and that. But when you see him on a daily basis and he's in the gym at 6 a.m. and then he's back in there again at 10 p.m. And I was watching this every day of my life, you know, going parallel with how hard I was working or wasn't working. And I really got a sense for the amount of minutes that this guy put into it. And that really inspired me. And that work ethic, I transferred a lot of that to my life. And so there are things about football that do transfer to real life. It's also like loving music or loving art. It's not everything in life has to have some, I don't want to say like tangible, some quantifiable purpose. You know, like, oh, I worked this job. I was able to get this money, which enabled me to get this apartment. And now I have some security, whatever. There are other parts of the human brain that need expression. And that's sort of what the Steelers what they do for me. And I just try and keep it in perspective. I do blow up during the year, but I have gotten a lot better about that. And I'm less embarrassed about my fervor as well, I think.
And there you have the Pittsburgh philosophical moment for this week. Hey, there were some rule changes that we had been kicking down the road until we had a little time. I just thought we could go over there. Nothing too major, but so they made the overtime rule changes permanent. The kickoff, actually, I'm sorry, there was an overtime rule change, but significantly, can we talk a little bit about pass interference? I think we got a little more clarity there.
Yeah, so this whole pass interference rule, the overreaction to the blown call in the Saints versus the Rams NFC championship game, it was causing some big time ripples. Listen, was it a terrible call? Yes, it was a terrible call. But, you know, people are going to overreact to this and they wanted to make, you know, every pass interference reviewable. And I can tell you, I can promise you that would have created way more, hundreds more Saints-Rams situations because of now every single it's like the old saying, you can find holding on any NFL play. You can find pass interference on any NFL play too, especially when you're slowing it down to slow motion. It sort of takes things out of context. So I was very scared that they were just going to make pass interference reviewable. And there's going to be this overcorrection to what we know as, you know, it's probably the worst call since the Tuck rule, right? And that's about 18 years in between those two calls. So I think that if you overcompensated and made all pass interference reviewable, that would have been a mistake. Now, it seems like they've made a pretty nice concession, though, to try and make sure that we don't have a situation that we got into with the Saints and the Rams. We don't have that situation again. So the new rule, which I'm not sure if it's been confirmed, but it looks like it's going to get confirmed, is the replay official will initiate a pass interference review if there are less than 2 minutes in the game. I think in the half too, but definitely in the game. And that means the coaches, they don't have to be the ones to challenge for that, which is also good because you never know what if the coach is out of challenges, then you still have the situation you had against the Saints and the Rams. Like, oh, just coincidentally, Sean Payton didn't have another challenge, so he couldn't do it. So same controversy is there, right? This, using the replay official to initiate the review, this ensures that, there's kind of a last line of defense. Also, my favorite part about the rule is the replays have to be watched in full speed. And that's because of what I just said. It's a subjective call. Pass interference, it isn't diabetes. It isn't binary. It's definitely pass interference or it's not. Oh, he touched a finger on his jersey. That's pass interference. Listen, it's a little bit of a nebulous rule. It's got to be a bit of a judgment call. So I'm glad that they have to watch it in full speed instead of slowing it down where you can really make the argument that every play is pass interference. So I think that's the other positive.
The other thing, and I'm trying to track this down, that they were going to talk about changing the overtime rule to ensure, I think Kansas City submitted a proposal that would guarantee each team at least one possession in overtime. I think right now, if a team receives and, you know, makes a field goal, the other team gets a chance, but if they score a touchdown right off the bat, the game is over. It always struck me that the result of a game shouldn't hinge on chance and that, you should at least get – why the resistance to – giving both teams an opportunity. So there's lengthy game is the only thing I can think of.
Right. And that's something. And that's something that why I'm glad that they didn't mess with that. I mean, this already with the pass interference review under 2 minutes, this could make them much longer. And there's already too many stops in football games as it is. And you know how horrible watching basketball is and under the 5 minutes. I think I heard this. I don't know if I heard it on Big Cat on the Barstool podcast the other day, but somebody was saying, I can't remember which podcast it was on, but somebody's dad told them when they were growing up, do not watch basketball games until the last 5 minutes because it's all worthless until the last 5 minutes. And the last 5 minutes is going to basically take as long as the early part in the game. So when you're coming to that overtime rule, like you're saying, yeah, that would be – you don't want these things to go on too long. But it really comes down to two things for me. Number one is how much do people care about defense? I actually think that the rule right now is good. Like – if your defense can stop the offense to a field goal, we're not saying that you have to stop them to no points. We're not saying you have to give them a three and out. Just you can get them all the way down to the 1 yard line. You can let them go all the way down the field as long as you stop them to a field goal. And then you give your offense an opportunity to go score. And so if we're saying the defense doesn't matter if the first team can score a touchdown. Well, we need to get the offense back on here because it's all about the offenses. Well, you have a defense too, and that's part of football. And I know that the rules have been subverting that concept recently, but shouldn't you put some weight onto the defense to be able to win a game for you? My only counter argument to that is the rules have gotten so skewed in favor of the offense that it helps the offense. So you are at a little bit of a disadvantage there, but that's where the 3 points come in. Like, okay, you don't have to stop them completely, but if you give up a touchdown, then hey, your defense gets paid too. You should have stopped them.
Well, that's a good point. I can't argue with that. I just like for entertainment value, I'd like to see them both have a shot. The other drill or the other thing that the other change is that they've banned the Oklahoma drill. Now they phrase this as ask teams to ban. So I'm not sure if this is a literal ban or, you know, just strongly suggested, but that's a pretty big change. That's pretty traditional, right? All the way down to Pee Wee.
I think that's really the point, is to get it all the way down to Pee Wee, because I don't think they do it that much in the NFL. They definitely aren't doing Oklahoma drills during the regular season, but I think the goal of the rule is to get colleges, high schools, and Pee Wee leagues to stop doing them, which I feel like we have talked about this before. It's tough. So sorry, guys, if we're sort of retreading on this. It's been on our outline for weeks because we have some segments on it, but I do think it's a good idea because there is a bit of, I don't want to say an attack on the sport of football, but obviously a lot of parents are worried about their kids playing football since the concussion studies have come out, and there's definitely a lot of legitimacy to that. So there are things that you can do to make the game more safe, like taking out Oklahoma drills, which I think that's a great idea. You'll make it more safe. You'll ensure the survival of the sport. You'll make it easier for kids to for parents to sign their kids up for the sport. And it doesn't, it's not unrealistic, like the, you know, some of the roughing the quarterback penalties that we complained about last year, where it gets a little bit ridiculous, you know, or the defenseless receiver in the head penalty, which can be a little bit ticky-tacky because we know that the receivers sometimes duck and they get hit in the head, or it's not intentional. It's something that you just can't stop. You don't have control over. Well, this Oklahoma drill thing, you do have control over. So I think it's a pretty good call.
So I'm going to be accountable for that. Yes, we did talk about this before. I guess I'm just so passionate about the Oklahoma drill. I just want to keep talking about it.
I think it's interesting, though. And there's more to talk about there. We have some segments on that underneath. And so maybe we'll save some more of the Oklahoma segments for when they get closer to Oklahoma drill season. Just like I have some more segments on what I really wanted to talk about in my quest towards Steeler fanaticism. I have some very funny stories about a precocious young adolescent and the things I used to do to become a Steelers historian at the ages of, you know, 11 and 12. But this is a pro radio move. These are teases. We got more in the bag.
Yeah. And what good are Oklahoma drills in shorts? So we'll defer that. The other thing we were talking about, and you have to remind me who was talking about this online. The difference, what is more important to a team, culture or strategy?
Right. So this might be where I mix up. It wasn't actually the Barstool podcast. I think it was Florio on Pro Football Talk with Big Cat from the Barstool podcast. But really, it's just more of a national conversation because the defensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator for the New York Jets, Greg Williams, the famous bounty hunter, bounty gate scandal in New Orleans where he got suspended for a year or whatever it was, when the players on the New Orleans Saints Super Bowl winning team used to take bets on who could knock the opposing starting quarterback out of the game. Apparently Jonathan Vilma, the middle linebacker at the time, put $10,000 on the table before that NFC championship game, trying to see who could knock out Brett Favre. And then he went to the Browns. He's the guy who said he had so many head coaching calls. He had 11 head coaching calls. He didn't have time to get to all of them. Of course, never got a head coaching job anywhere. So the guy is a little bit delusional. He's a little bit of a psychopath. He's a little bit of a joke, to be honest with you. But he has been able to put together some decent defenses. He's never put together a really great defense, honestly. This isn't like Rex Ryan back in the day when you used to – whatever team he went to would get a great defense until it all kind of crumbled in Buffalo. But He has had some very competitive defenses, and obviously the New Orleans Saints, when they won the Super Bowl, he was their coordinator, and they were very opportunistic. When he was talking to the media last week, he said, the Jets, teams don't bring me in as the defensive coordinator for my strategy. They bring me in for a culture change, and that culture is much more important than X's and O's. And when I first heard that, and I think when a lot of people first hear that, you think, yes, this is Greg Williams. He's a complete psychopath, delusional meathead, and this is why he never has a top-ranked defense, because maybe if you put some thoughts into the X's and O's, like, I don't know, the New England Patriots, the Baltimore Ravens, the teams who are very good at defense, maybe if you did that, you'd have a top-tier defense. But then I thought about it a little more, and one thing I will say to his credit is he never had like an abundance of talent on any of the defenses he coached for, whether it was the Saints, the Redskins, the Browns. And there is something to be said defensively, probably more than offensively, you know, scheme-wise, because on defense, you're reacting to what the offense is doing. Your scheme can only go so far, whereas on offense, you can get a Kyle Shanahan or a Sean McVay who can orchestrate misdirection and movement that can manipulate the defense. It's a little bit different. But when I look at the Jets, I see they have the leader of their defense is, what is it, second or third year safety, Jamal Adams, who's basically an Earl Thomas clone with a huge mouth and a huge attitude, kind of a Jalen Ramsey-esque type of guy as far as that goes. And then they have the Williams twins on the defensive line. Basically, both of those guys were considered the number one overall prospect in their draft years, and they slid to the Jets at like picks 3 and 4, respectively. Then they got C.J. Mosley, who's obviously a Baltimore Ravens linebacker. You know he has attitude. So if you think about it, they have talent, and if you can get them to have that Jacksonville Jaguars, that Seattle Seahawks Legion of Boom type of swagger, the big mouth, whether it was Richard Sherman or whether it was Jalen Ramsey still on the Jaguars, I do think that counts for something, because defense, the swagger goes into a lot of it. And like I said, it's a reactionary side of the ball. So if you have the talent, as long as your scheme isn't Keith Butler crap, you might be okay. So what do you think on the, I guess that touting of culture over strategy isn't as absurd as I thought it was when he first said it.
The fact that it's even compared, that you're even talking about them in the same breath, is the absurdity, because culture is an overused term. What does it mean? Does it mean they all get along together? Does it mean they all think together? Or does it mean something like the way I would look at the Patriots? This Belichick establishes his operating plan, and you're either with me or you're without me. And in that way, he eliminates all doubt. Everybody sort of knows what you have to do to perform, and he sticks by those rules. Is that a culture? What's it, you know, we talk about a culture of winning. Well, you don't win until you have the talent and you can coordinate the talent. I don't think you can motivate the talent. I mean, I think motivation comes within, and I don't think too many of these guys in the NFL need that. They're there, you know, between the, right, you know, just the competitive nature and the money. I'm not so sure if there's anybody who needs any motivation, they should be out. So to me, it's the job is putting people in the best position to win. And I think that in itself is just teaching people the basics. You do have to have, you know, there is strategy involved. And like you say, even the inability to, you're sort of following the offense on defense, even that inability requires some kind of strategy to deal with it. So,
of course,
you know, I gave this some more thought, and I didn't want to just dismiss it because it sounded ridiculous. I actually, there's no scenario where you'd have to pick one or the other.
Yeah, and that's an awesome point you made about the Patriots, because if you think about it, obviously they have fantastic strategy. Bill Belichick is one of the greatest defensive minds in history. I mean, he was behind the New York Giants, Super Bowl winning teams on that defense. And then obviously you've seen all the things he's done in New England, the first half of their dynasty. Nobody wants to admit this at this point, because apparently it was Tom Brady who led them all to all these Super Bowls. But no, Tom Brady was a very good complimentary piece towards a fantastic defense. And now those are all the famous Patriots defenders, the like borderline Hall of Fame type of guys, with Bruschi and Ty Law and all the people they had back then. And now they just have this cavalcade of like, yeah, they get some pretty good guys, but they always have a top five defense. So strategically, yes, they're great. Obviously, Josh McDaniels working with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick on the offensive side. We know that they have a 20-year compiled offense that strategically is so good that it can get people like Chris Hogan wide open without anybody within 50 yards of him in the AFC Championship against the Steelers. So we know they have strategy, but just as much as that, you hear about the Patriot way. And again, I'll give you another little apology to our fans here about if you don't want to hear us talk about AB and Bell, or you don't hear us talk about the Patriots. Well, you need to talk about the Patriots because they are the gold standard. And if you measure what they do, you can see how close other teams are to accomplishing things. But like I was saying with the Patriot way, the whole concept of like, if you know, if you're on the Patriots, you're playing for the team. They don't give a crap about how many catches you have game to game, or how many carries, or this or that or whatever. And part of that, they get that luxury because they've won so much now that people know that, hey, they can do this with or without me. But the other part is just what they've established. And New England is famous for not being fun. Like if you're a player there and you're a coach there, it is a grind and it's not enjoyable legitimately until you get those ring ceremonies every year or every other year or whatever it is. So they bring in people who can take that. And there have been other players who haven't been able to take that. You even look at Josh Gordon. I don't know if that's the exact reason for it, but Josh Gordon was absolutely tearing it up with the Patriots last year and didn't make it through the end of the season. Now I can't attribute that all to being the Patriot way, but you got to wonder if that has something to do with it. And they are able in New England to marry that culture of like, you are here to work and you know that you're part of this machine and you have to do your job, do your responsibility. And that's how they get away with marginally talented rosters being so unbelievably successful, because of the cultural aspect. And then they have the scheme to put them in position to make the plays, or like what the Chargers did to the Steelers, figuring out their coverages to make sure that they can manipulate the Steelers defense into covering Keenan Allen with linebackers every play or whatever it was.
So Jaguar cornerback Jalen Ramsey is looking for a new deal. You have any thoughts, any bets on the up possibility he will get one before the end of his rookie contract?
Now, that you know, as far as segues go, I don't know how to segue into it. But Jalen Ramsey, we did talk about him a little bit earlier, and then you and I were talking on the phone the other day about this, and I was talking to P. Butch, a resident Jets fan who we need to have back on the podcast soon. But I was talking about this. Jalen Ramsey, people are coming after him because he's such a douche. But if he were on our team, he would be the most loved douche of all time because he is unbelievable. He's pretty much the NFL's best cornerback. And he has at least 1 or 2 years left on his deal. And, you know, he was a top 10 pick. So he gets paid more than, you know, what happened to Le'Veon Bell, Martavis Bryant, and Juju as in terms of rookies who overperform, who outperform those rookie contracts, but then you're locked into it for 4 years in those guys' cases and the Steelers' cases, and you could be one of the best receivers in the league, but you're still not even getting, you know, barely $1 million a year or whatever it is. Well, Jalen Ramsey was a top 10 pick, so he gets more than they get, but this guy has been the best cornerback in the NFL for the past 3 years. So he is getting it's pennies on the dollar for what the Jaguars are getting for this guy right now. He wants the Jaguars to sign him to a new deal. I think that was his third year. He's going into his fourth year since he's the first.
Yeah, right? He's going to his fourth year, and he'll be subject to a fifth-year option.
Exactly. And then you can franchise tag him after that. And then you can even franchise him a second time in a row. So, like, these first-round picks get really screwed. Like, the teams can lock them up for 7 years to underpay them. And I know that if you get on the franchise tag at the end, you're getting some of your value, but Jalen Ramsey wants to get paid now instead of waiting 2 years or 3 years or whatever it is. And honestly, I think the Jaguars are crazy for not doing it. The Eagles just did the same thing with Carson Wentz. They decided to pay him though a year early. And you know what's going to happen is, first off, Jalen Ramsey deserves the new contract. yes, he's gotten paid more than his contemporary rookie contract guys, but the dude's been the number one corner. He should be making quarterback type money. So you're still getting a crazy discount on him. But if you sign him now, just the way inflation works with salaries and everything like that, and especially with the new CBA coming up and legalized gambling going legal nationwide, there's going to be so much more revenue coming into the NFL. The salary cap's going to increase more than ever. The player salaries are going to go through the roof. If you sign him now, you're actually going to be getting a discount in 2 or 3 years from what he'd be making. And I think that he is right to ask for the new deal. And then he went on Instagram Live and he's being funny and he's joking around. He's very charismatic, obviously, telling his teammate, running back Leonard Fournette, that he gave them like basically like the Deion Sanders quote. They had their chance to give me the contract this year. If they're going to be trying to get that discount next year, I'm going to tell them you had the chance to get that discount. You're going to need to put me on layaway. I'm asked for so much money. They're going to need to put me on layaway, a la Deion Sanders. And I think that the Jaguars are probably making a mistake and they'd be saving some money if they sign him a little bit early.
I don't know. These rookies, and we were going to talk a little bit about, my conversation was going to be about fairness. And I know I've argued this before that it has nothing to do with being fair. This is about business and what they can get away with. I am no socialist or communist, but man, this system is so bad. It has so far away from being.
Oh yeah.
Fair is not even the right word. But it works to the advantage of fans because we keep pouring money into the NFL. But is that? But when you watch this guy, he had a $22 million contract, which is about what you can count on as a first round rookie.
$22 million for 5 years. $22 million total.
$22 million total is what the package for a first round.
Yeah, you should be making that per year, basically.
Yeah, without a chance that you're locked. I mean, you got Jalen. He got a $15 million guarantee when he signed. So, but with a upside of up to $22 million, and man, they're getting the production out of these guys. And they are paying for veteran salaries, and it's just a. But then you have the situation where you have a veteran like Chris Boswell with $2 million due to him. And the Steelers have all the leverage. I mean, that a contract isn't a contract. A contract is black. I mean, I considered that blackmail, right? Boswell had $2 million, and he said, "You could call it what you want. It's not an. It's in his contract, and they did not guarantee him on anything other than they wouldn't cut him today." So,
right.
Look, don't take your $2 million. We want to see how training camp goes, and then we'll, if you make it, we'll give you your $2 million. And I know it's a Hobson's choice for Chris Boswell, $2 million, and he will most likely get cut? Or is he just going to hope he makes it and foregoes $2 million and they can cut him anyway?
Well, it's messed up. It's just not a two-way street because basically what they're saying, and obviously I understand from a strategic point what they're trying to do. We can't trust Chris Boswell right now, and you got to put the best team on the field, right? But they're saying – we paid you all this money. We gave you a new contract and you're not performing up to that contract. So we don't want to give you that money. But they don't want to mention when he was basically the best kicker in the league playing for $500 a game. And I'm exaggerating there, but they picked him up off the street. So it's like, wait, but what about that? Oh, don't worry about that. That was fair. We were getting the best kicker in the league who won 3 or 4 or 5 games, the prior year for the Steelers on game-winning kicks, had the best kicking percentage, I believe, in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And at that time, they weren't paying anything from him. He was barely making any money. They picked him up off of the street to save them from the Josh Scobie disaster. So how is that fair? Like, oh, when you're outperforming it, no, stick to your contract. But if they finally give you money and you're underperforming it, oh, well, you're not sticking to the contract. Like, it's just not a two-way street. And that's the real problem with it. And then with the Jaguars thing with Jalen Ramsey, what you were saying you know, it's not fair. It's about business. It's funny because to me, they're crossing the line of, well, it's definitely not fair, but they're also, in my opinion, practicing bad business when it comes time to construct their team. You could get this superstar locked up at a discount and you're missing that opportunity. And the thing with fans that there's this, it's understandable because at the surface, you can see why people and fans get mad at players because we're loyal to our teams and we love the players individually, but it seems greedy when you see guys who are making millions of dollars and they want more millions of dollars. Well, the fact is, like, this isn't a government stipend. Their salaries don't come out of your taxes. They come out of people who are paying to see the games, from people who are buying concessions at the games, from people who are buying jerseys, who are buying DirecTV subscriptions, who are watching the games, and all these massive companies are selling advertising for the commercials during the game. The money is rolling in, and we are the players are making that money, and we're lucky that we follow a team like the Steelers that is overall way more on the moral high ground than a lot of other teams are. Luckily, a family-owned team, and they are trying to win the Super Bowl every year. We're constantly, for 10 years, talking about how close the Steelers are to the top of the salary cap. But there are other teams who intentionally spend below the salary cap. That's why there is a salary cap floor. There is a minimum amount of money you are allowed to spend. I don't think a lot of fans are aware of that. And some teams, believe it or not, but it's the truth, stay closer to that floor so that the owners, who are already billionaires, who are a lot of people you really have to worry about, so that they can make more money, even though there's more money that's coming in that they could fairly pay to their players. But so that's who the money's going to instead of the players. This isn't just as simple as like, oh, they're millionaires, they don't deserve it. Of course they deserve it. They're earning it. People are giving them the money. So I don't know. I'm a little soapboxy right now. I'm sorry. I'm probably not expressing myself fully accurately there, but you would like to see there be some sort of a meeting in the middle here, because like you said, look at Chris Boswell. That's just someone who's getting screwed.
Well, I'm going to backtrack a little bit on that. I was just looking at his salary. He got $7.3 million last year, signed between a signing and roster bonuses. So he did get paid. But I will say what I said before is you have these contingent
fair
roster bonuses in the future, and they gave him a choice, take it and get cut today or defer it. Hope you don't get cut in August. And that just doesn't sit well with me. So, look, any kind of changing of the allocation of the dollars is going to come out of veterans' pockets. Now, what would have happened with Bud Dupree? I mean, obviously, he took his fifth-year option, and I think you have to pay him. He's a top pick, so he's got to be paid at the average of the top 10 linebackers, I guess, or at that position. So that would have to that might go away, and that wouldn't bother me at all because I think we overpaid for Bud.
Right. Well, I don't know. I think, you know, like I said before, I think Bud can be he's obviously being tremendously overpaid. I think he can be a solid contributor. So do you. I know we've talked about this a lot as an outside linebacker in terms of, hey, he's not going to make the Pro Bowl, but he can do some good things. He can be schemed into some sacks. He plays decent run defense. He's decent in pass coverage and everything like that. So he's overpaid right now. My hope is that he plays this year. This could be his best year yet because, listen, whether you like to say it or not, he's played super injured 2 years in a row. And I think that he can get a little bit better, and it'll be great to see if he plays a little bit better. And then going into the next year, maybe he doesn't have a ton of suitors in free agency and the Steelers can re-sign him for a lesser price than what they paid for this year. I don't know if it'll work like that. I think it's, you know, open market. These other people may not be rushing to pay him a ton of money, but there's no way of me knowing what they'll want to pay. I wouldn't take that bet, but there's plenty of other bets I would take, and I'd take them all on my bookie because my bookie offers bettors in all major markets and entertaining lineup of gaming options. They have unique prop bets. Will Bud Dupree make more or less in 2020 than the 2019 fifth year option amount? I don't know. Let's bet on it on my bookie. If you're clairvoyant. Take advantage of in-game live betting on over-unders and fantasy points scored. Visit MyBookieAG online today and don't forget to use that promo code OUTPOST25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. Remember, Who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. You play, you win, you get paid.
We're going to get out of here because this is the This is the one day a month I can get red meat without nagging for it. I'm going to go and pick up the ribs for Father's Day, for the Father's Day outing this afternoon.
Nice.
Something I've been planning for 364 days. We love to get your feedback. Check us out on Instagram at Steelers Outpost. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Leave us a note on the website, SteelersOutpost.com, or just shoot us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Until next week, thanks for listening. Go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way. Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs. A gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.